drawing cues. It's so much fun.
The sign, the bridal shower sign got bent, so they have to print a new one. I have to advise and help, and I had to fix it. So I'm just making sure they have everything they need.
We're already into show notes. 99 doesn't know that because she's dealing with a bridal crisis. But I wanted to get a little bit of that on tape just to show you that not only does she hold my entire world together and she holds the unfucking universe together, she's also saving the planet. She's saving animals. And she's saving a wedding.
Just a bridal shower. I mean, not just, but A. So it's on the whole wedding.
Unfuckers, well, she deals with this crisis. I'm just going to run through a couple things here quickly. We have a very, very robust... Pastor Tim will be happy to know that we have a very robust show notes today. There's not going to... Well, there's going to be a little meandering because we have to get to a couple of things.
And you already started me off. I was on mic. Call me on a hot mic. What if I called the bride a bitch?
I would have cut it out.
She's not. She's lovely and my best friend.
Oh, your best friend?
Yeah.
How many best friends do you have?
Well, as in the words of Mindy from Mindy Project.
Of course.
Best friend's not a person. It's a tier.
Oh.
She's my oldest best friend.
That's not Mork and Mindy, right?
No.
Were you a fan? Were you a fan when you were little?
What's the thing? What do they say? They have a thing they say?
Nanu Nanu.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. No, I never seen it.
What? Say it again.
I never seed it.
You never seed it?
I never seed it.
Really?
Really.
Interesting. Not even on the YouTubes?
I mean, no offense.
So conceptually, how do you know about Mork and Mindy?
I don't know about anything. Nanu Nanu. Literally, how do I know about anything?
Your parents.
No, I don't think they watched it either.
No.
I think that was probably, they were probably like too old for it by the time it came out.
Pam Dauber. What a smoke show.
Dauber. Indy. What a name.
Yeah.
Dauber. Isn't that what they call those things you use at bingo?
I think you're thinking of Jeffrey Dahmer because she's making a stabbing motion right now.
A bingo marker. Are they called dabbers or daubers or something?
Yeah, I don't know. See, there you go. Look at us learning up each other. As always.
My dad would take Grammy to the bingo at Temple sometimes.
For real? Oh, bingo's fun. It's a good like drinking sport.
Oh, okay. Right. We are playing bingo at the bridal shower.
Are you?
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. Will you be drinking?
Yeah, but I have to speak, so I'm going to make sure that, you know, I don't throw him back too hard.
So you'll be high?
No, that would be worse.
Would it? You just go on and on and on.
Not even.
Wait,
just,
so if you're speaking
fragments,
how many words, not even sentences, into it before you start leaking?
Well, I don't think I'm going to be crying because I'm not doing like a speech about it. It's just about I'm going to be running the bingo because I'm the maid of honor.
I can still see you crying during bingo.
It's possible. So anything is possible if you just believe.
Hey, we've had a lot of signups for the newsletter, like a lot. And that's making me really happy. The free signups for the newsletter get you the newsletter on Fridays. That's our weekly newsletter. And it's growing and it's beautiful. It's a work of art. I love it. There's another newsletter, though, that you need to know about. If you're not a member of the show, if you're not a sustaining member at any tier, you do not get another whole newsletter. It comes out on Tuesdays. That newsletter is done in collaboration with the folks over at Newsbeat. And it has original essays. And has original material in it, in addition to linking out to what we call the Tuesday top five articles that we think you need to be looking at. A stripped down version of Max Notes that appears in the Friday version as well. But that's just one of the perks that you get as a sustaining member of the show. Certain levels of the show also get you the perk of a monthly sticker pack. That sticker pack is now a combo pack for this month, as we have March and April going out together. But those of you that received the first one know that this is a high quality premium item that we're giving back to people so that you can litter the universe with UNFTR propaganda. Or just put it on your adorable little notebooks and laptops, whatever. You can also put it in public if you wanna defame institutions of higher learning, hospitals, parking garages. There's really no limit to it. Keep it off of anything that is a local business unless they encourage it. I mean, none of that makes any sense. That there's no parameters to where you want to put your stickers. You do you. But the stickers are really awesome. So those were finalized and we're going to get them any minute so we can send those out. So look forward to that if you are a member. If you're not a member, that's one of the things you're missing out on. Another thing you're missing out on if you're a comrade, Mersing. if you're a Comrade and Above member, is the monthly hang with Max and friends. So yeah, that is a very private hang that we do on the video, live streamed, but only for select members to just come and hang with us. So that's coming up as well. And we have so much going on. So that's the deal. All of this, of course, wrapped into our spring fund, friend, and Hellraiser period, where we're trying to stoke as many flames as we possibly can, meet as many people and make as many new friends as we can, and of course, raise some money so that we could actually make this our official day jobs. And we are only about, I would say, 30% to that goal overall, and it's going to take us a long time, but we're patient. And we're willing to do the work.
Max is having a day, so he really wants this to be his day job today.
I am. I am having sort of a day. I'm just sort of like, this needs to be all I do. But it's okay. You have those days. It's a beautiful day out right now. It's the perfect type of weather. This is my favorite type of weather.
Beautiful day in the neighborhood. Beautiful day in the neighborhood. I don't know the rest of the words. Mr. Rogers. Well,
should be my neighbor.
Oh, that's it?
Something like that.
Okay.
Something, something, be my neighbor. I am allowing space up top because I think it's massively important.
Okay.
To talk Taylor Swift for two reasons. One, because I love 99 and I'm very sensitive to the things that are meaningful in her life that she needs to share. The other thing is because it was just the two of us in the office yesterday, and I just happened to just casually mention, hey, how's the album? And I got back a dissertation. And she could not see me smiling as she was just sort of, I mean, it was one of the most cogent explanations of anything. It was like you were in our day job setting. It was like we were on a Zoom and I asked you to present something because you were so ready and so prepared and had thought so much about it in such a short period of time. I mean, the album only came out, that I wanted to allow some space for you to tell Unfuckers your thoughts on the special surprise double album.
Yes, the double album portion was a surprise.
Cool.
So people, you know, she likes to drop Easter eggs. People basically say that Swifties are essentially QAnon because we're always looking for the drops. So she'd been doing a peace sign a lot. So everyone thought it meant two. So what does two mean? Does it mean there's a second album entirely? There was a lot of conjecture. I think
maybe she's a Nixon fan.
That's possible.
Yep. Okay.
I like to read other people's analysis of the Easter eggs and let them hunt for them. Mm-hmm. And I just enjoy the theories mm-hmm. and sit back. I'm like, they can do the hard work because people get really into it. But the two meant 2 a.m. double album. So she released the first half at midnight, which I don't usually stay up to listen because I'm a sleepy girl. And I know that it'll, you know, I'll be up for a good amount of time, but I did stay up to listen. And then I made my roommate wait up till 2 to see what was coming. And we did not listen to the second half that night. But yeah, I loved it. I mean, I did tell Max that I'm with things I love, I can be almost not too biased, but uncritical, non-critical, because they just make me happy. And I'm not looking for things to fault, if that makes sense. So it definitely was a little bit of a slow burn. You know, the songs didn't take me immediately, but
she's like, it's taken a day for me to love them all so much.
there's a piece published this week because a piece.
I can't get out of the way of thought pieces on this fucking album. Well, I can't believe the number of outlets that have dedicated ink to just going deep into the meaning of it's amazing. Either,
and in both ways, you know, there are people who are just hell-bent on shitting on it regardless of how it sounds and what they think, and there are people who immediately released positive reviews, which they obviously have had time probably to listen to it before. I'm not sure how much earlier they get the records. Do they get them like a day early? Or
I doubt it,
you know. So I guess they were waiting up to
only
write
because that
pieces.
Doesn't seem to be her style.
Yeah, that's fair. But there were some released right away that were positive and some that were negative. And they wrote a piece about the problem with music critics today is that we don't give albums time and that we're just making snap judgments. So yeah, the album sounded different. It sounded a little bit like, if there are other Swifties out there, it sounded a little bit like Midnights and Folklore Had a Baby.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. So it wasn't slower. There's a few, you know, upbeat pop songs, but nothing like 1989, nothing like Shake It Off or I Knew You Were Trouble. There aren't those bangers on it in the same way. And that's okay because, you know, a lot of this album was clearly cathartic for her to write and release, talking about her breakup of, you know, her 6-year relationship and then sort of a toxic rebound relationship. I'm sure I talked about it. I think probably that I was mad at her, you know, I don't know, a year ago because she was dating a guy who was kind of a dick. And I was, you know, I expected better of her.
You were disappointed.
But also, you know, she has a song about that, about basically like she says, my reputation is my own. My name's my own to Sully. So like fucking leave me alone a little bit, which that's also fair. Everyone makes mistakes and without because people wrote like an open letter to her about, you know, dating this guy because he was so. Can you imagine if your boyfriend or not even your boyfriend, this guy that you're rebounding, you know, you're probably just fucking him. A bunch of people write an open letter telling you to break up with him. I mean, the parasocial relationships are really extreme in the Swiftie universe, and that's why people hate Swifties so much. But yeah, I really like it. I have a few favorites. I'm still sitting. There are 31 songs, so there's a lot of songs to digest. I'm still sitting with the latter half a little bit because, you know, when you start an album, you end up hearing the first half more so than the second half, so I need to spend deliberately some time, but... Yeah, I just like hearing new stuff from her.
Mm-hmm.
She's a beautiful writer. She's a beautiful singer. The instrumentation is great. I mean, she works with Jack Antonoff from Bleachers and Aaron Dessner from The National and Bryce Dessner. So, you know, a lot of, and Florence from Florence and the Machine.
Does she live and work in a studio? Like, does she have a compound now?
Electric Lady, she records that mostly, I believe.
So she has work, she goes to work.
Yeah. There's, you know, there.
She's pretty prolific considering she does not do that like at home.
Yeah, I think she probably recorded. I'm sure she has something set up probably at her house in L.A., which is, I think, where she spent most of COVID. So because she recorded some of those songs at home, I'm sure she has like a makeshift or maybe official studio there. But I do think she prefers.
It's really expensive. She might not have the money to do it, though.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah.
But people, you know, people are like, she's the only artist that is getting dragged for putting out too much music. That's what? Why is that a problem? Why is that a problem? So, yeah, I know that people, you know, some listeners.
I think they made the same critique of Beethoven as well.
No, of course.
Ludwig, slow it down.
Yeah.
It's enough.
But I know some motherfuckers probably feel strongly against her because... You know, yes, she's part of the capitalist system. She is a billionaire. That's not great. There shouldn't be any billionaires. At least she's not openly taking advantage of people like most billionaires. I can say that. Yes, she flies a private jet a lot. However, she is not in the top 10 celebrities. And it's also another mechanism to distract you from who's actually fucking up our climate and our environment. I'm not saying it's good and I'm not saying I condone it. But people, it's also part of the whole misogynist playbook against her of like find one thing and just dunk on her constantly because we don't want this successful woman in power. So because of that, that's the only thing. Well, what about her private jets? I'm like, what about any athlete? Look at their usage. Look at influencers. The kid who tracks Elon Musk's jets and that like and then he was tracking Taylor's jet usage too. He flies private jets all the time. It's such a double standard. So, you know, I know we've gotten feedback. She stopped talking about Taylor Swift. I get it. I'm sorry, but she makes me very happy. I think she does net positive things for the world. And
I know our audience. I know the audience that listens to show notes. And I can tell you this, they are genuinely happy that she makes you happy.
I hope so.
That's the feedback we usually get. There's a couple of haters out there that would be like, stop, enough. But for the most part, just like Billy Joel came out with a song after 35 fucking years. And I was like, and I was delighted, just delighted. Imagine if he did that all the time. Somebody said something interesting. I'll throw it back on you asking about Taylor not being not into her discography as you are. Somebody said to me that I can't unhear. Yeah, I'll start listening to Billy Joel when he starts writing songs about somebody other than himself. And I was like, yeah, that's not,
Captain Jack. I hope that's not about him.
But it's about his depression.
Fair.
Yeah. You know, and the era he grew up in. in his hometown. But I'm like, you're right about what you know. That's a fucked up criticism. But does Taylor have any, I'm sorry, can I call her Taylor? I feel bad.
I think so, yes.
Thank you. Does she have any non-biographical or biographical adjacent songs that you would consider commentary or, you know what I mean? Like social commentary type stuff. She ever lean into that?
She has one song called Only the Young, which is about young people changing the world. It was released in conjunction with her documentary, Miss Americana. So it was sort of a direct response to everything going on in the world. Politicians, you know, there's a line about like essentially school shootings, and I like it. It's a good song. It's not one she performs at her concerts, but she does have that song. Commentary wise, I mean, she definitely talks about the culture. There are a few songs surrounding fame culture. I mean, she is sort of in the center of it. So there are direct commentaries about her, but also about the world and how they perceive her. There's a song called Nothing New with Phoebe Bridgers, which is about, like, you know, how we hype up the, you know, an up and coming artist and they're the next big thing. And then all of a sudden there's a new shiny object. And what happens when you're nothing new?
You get put on the back of the discount rack like another can of peas.
Exactly. So there's that one. And there's a similar song on this album that's sort of about, well, there's one called But Daddy, I Love Him, which is about the open letter situation and all those people. So about, you know, kind of saying to fans, like, just chill out. I'm a person.
So no, that's not about her.
Why?
That is about her.
Yeah, but I'm saying her commentary is about the ecosystem surrounding fame. So it's
surrounding her.
Yes, I said that. But
her fame.
I think
so. The answer is no.
I think
she only writes songs about herself.
I think you can apply her fame to other famous people.
So she's a megalomaniac.
Sure. You know, you were being so nice. I don't know why you changed.
Because that's what the dude was doing to me about Billy Joel. And the answer is,
what the fuck
so
else
fucking
are you gonna,
what?
What are you going to write
you're
about?
Supposed to write about what you know.
Yeah.
You're supposed to write
what
about
what does
the
Bruce Springsteen
condition.
Write about? Just like a bunch of dudes on the street.
The working
that he
man.
Knows. And he thinks he's that. So everyone only writes about what they know.
Exactly.
Unless, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess Fish doesn't write about what they know. They just write a bunch of fun, nonsensical stories about a girl who picks up a haunted doll and it basically kills everyone around her.
Oh my God.
That's Esther. So.
Oh, the great Esther.
Esther. Yeah. What else do they have? Yeah. The Squirming Coil. Icarus Flying Too Close to the Sun. I mean.
That's fun.
The Grateful Dead. A lot of Americana, you know. Casey Jones. Riding That Train. High on Cocaine. Maybe they know a little bit about that. But I think most people... Storytelling is a different gift than songwriting, I think. And you can tell, and I think Taylor has both, but I don't think she's necessarily interested in creating worlds for her songs outside of what she already does. Like, not all of her songs are autobiographical. People just assign meaning to all of them. Like, this is about this guy, and this is about this guy, and this is about her friend. And it's like, sometimes things just inspire you and you build a world, and she does do that. And most of Folklore and Evermore are not autobiographical. Like, they might be romantic, some romantic songs, a song about killing your husband because he's cheating. That's cool. Those songs, obviously. I mean, if she killed a man, I support her, obviously.
Yeah, clearly.
Yeah. But, yeah, so she does write about other things. But she is her own artist and muse.
You mentioned environmental controversies, fake or otherwise.
I wouldn't say fake. I don't lie. That's why I don't want to discredit the criticism. But I just want to caution against getting caught up in that narrative. Because if you're not applying that to every other person, you know, look at who you listen to. Do you like hip hop? Do you look at your rappers? Where are they going? What's their jet usage? Look at the sports teams you follow. Where are they going? So, like, I just don't. If you're going to do it across the board. And, you know, I don't really see many people doing that. So that's my biggest criticism. So don't want to discount the usage. But
as a sideline spectator, just kind of on the outside of some of these discussions, just want to say that from my perspective, there are, and I'm very indifferent on Taylor Swift, not indifferent, but I you know, I'm not a hater. I'm not a lover. You know, I'm sort of neutral about it. So I look at everything really kind of objectively. There are a lot of criticisms about her and her music may be subjective, whether she should have won an album of the year over somebody else, but it can't be discounted because we live in a society and a music business and a country that has often overlooked contributions of, you know, artists of color, for example, over somebody else. So it's not that happened or that it always happens, but it can't be just discounted. Her selective activism has been a thing, who she's associated with. You know, there's a lot of things where someone might say, okay, here's an artist who's really great and does great work and has a great fan base, but the attention that was given during the football season for doing nothing other than dating a football guy, like, there are people who are going to criticize the way that our culture, that our machine hoists this person up on a pedestal and finds a way to, you know, shrug off some of the maybe problematic aspects of what she does. You know, I'll have these arguments with people who think that Jay-Z can do no wrong, and I'll give you plenty of reasons why I think Jay-Z can do wrong. This happens to all artists across a certain level, from the Michael Jacksons to the Elvis. Everybody's got critique and criticisms. And I think that the fact that this person gets such overwhelming attention and praise is problematic to some folks who say that a lot of the criticisms that we're not even talking, that y'all didn't even really address, or that, you know, even Max started getting into, are overlooked and shrugged aside because she's the great Taylor Swift. I'm just saying that there's more to it than this. And, you know, maybe this is, if we're going to keep having these discussions, maybe we should actually have them a little more objectively. Maybe even an episode on the economics of superstardom, where we could really look at some of these things. I don't know. Might be interesting. Whatever. That's all. Back to it.
With respect to the environmental angle of all this, I just want to plug our phone a friend this weekend is with a professor named Tad DeLay. Yes, that's his real name. He wrote a book that was, I think, just released called The Future of Denial. He wrote it over the pandemic. This is, I believe, his third book, and I can't say enough about it, unfuckers. So it's going to be up in our bookshop, but he does tease at the end of our interview an even less expensive way to get a hold of it directly through the publisher. So I would recommend doing that if you're interested in doing that. It's directly through the publisher, which is Verso Books. This book it's basically programmed for the UNFTR audience. It draws in some psychoanalysis about denial, philosophy. It has a theological, it looks at it through a theological lens as well, and an economic lens, and particularly a Marxist lens. It's kind of a feat. So I would encourage people to, if you're into climate science and understanding the politics, the economics, and also the psychology of how we are going to and are currently addressing climate change. It's an amazing book. So look for that drop this weekend on our phone a friend. And just a couple of really quick headlines to go through that are derived from our newsletters, but then one that broke after we published the Tuesday members only newsletter. Big congratulations to Summer Lee for winning her primary.
Woo!
Handily, might I add. Interesting to note that AIPAC did not get involved in this primary. I believe there was enough blowback on their efforts to unseat her the first time around. And I think they read the polling data, if I'm not mistaken. Ryan Grimm released a piece about this last night. I think they had looked at the polling data and said, okay, this is not, Summer Lee's just going to be too far ahead. She's too entrenched and too popular. This isn't the hill that we're going to die on. So they're diluting the funds and sending them elsewhere, which is not to say there weren't big forces and billionaire forces lined up against her candidacy again. But she prevailed and remains, I believe, the newest, youngest member of the squad, officially on the squad, right?
Yes.
I believe she's considered part of the squad now. So congratulations to her. As we actually waited to put out the newsletter to see what Tesla's earnings would be, and as we communicated, so interesting. Wall Street is such a fascinating beast. So Tesla shit the bed and did not meet their revenue goals or their gross margin goals.
Gross.
And and there was actually a point that had come up in DeLay's book as well. If you back their carbon offset program and government subsidies out of it, they're still not profitable. So it took them I think we covered this in the last episode. It was something in the order of like 18 years or whatever it was, or 9 years rather, right, to turn a profit. But that profit isn't a real operational profit. So, and that's even the case. So if you just look at the auto manufacturing numbers exclusively, Tesla, the supercharged vehicle, the big SUV that they made, the regular vehicles, the
Cybertruck.
The Cybertruck, yes.
Seen one.
I saw one. Me too.
Yeah, just singular. Just one.
Yeah. So if you back all of the automotive stuff out of the equation, they're still hemorrhaging money. So it's their other programs. So they've got their, you know, battery programs and all the charging stations that they sell throughout the country.
The coil.
What's the Tesla coil, of course, which is the transmogrification device that Calvin and Hobbes use. Am I right about that?
Yes. Yeah. And then Calvin pissed on it.
And then
we all put it on our cars.
And that's why they're losing money. So
wait, is Calvin the boy or is Hobbes the boy?
Calvin's the boy.
Okay.
Hobbes is the tiger. Yeah. Okay. So if you back all of the other subsidies and so they get carbon offset money. Company does something really bad in the world, they can purchase a block of the carbon offset shares that Tesla gets to take credit for as a quote unquote environmental company.
They're bullshit, right?
Yeah, total bullshit. Okay. They're complete bullshit.
I do think Taylor purchases carbon offsets, but
they all do.
It's
you do.
Because you have to, otherwise you look worse, right? But we all sort of know it's an empty gesture, more or less.
It is. Like, for example, one of the major polluters in the, and it may be ExxonMobil. Oh, I'm sorry. Maybe BP purchased
BP
purchased a forest, a literal forest.
Oh, well,
in Central America.
But I don't think forests should be owned.
Correct. And to claim that as their offset, except that the forest was never scheduled to be deforested.
That's
has no productive value whatsoever. But they were able to basically reduce their purchase carbon offset to reduce their profitability. Then,
so that counts as a carbon offset buying a forest.
Yeah, yeah. Why do you want one?
No, let's do it. I think they should belong to the earth.
Oh,
like Pocahontas.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you don't
the colors of the wind.
Okay, now I need to rethink my Hanukkah gift for you.
Wait,
I was gonna buy you the Adirondacks.
Thank you.
All of them.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I would love to own the
art. Maybe I didn't conceptually understand. Is that what everyone does?
No.
Okay.
No. So
this is like
companies that have a perceived or authorized value of being an environmental, you know, having an environmental program can affix a value to that.
Right.
And then somebody actually pays them for that.
Yes.
And that will offset their.
But what is actually offsetting?
Nothing.
Okay.
Nothing.
They're not like planting trees or like doing something, converting something to something.
No, you can do that.
That's what I thought it was.
You can do that.
I didn't realize.
It's actually just it's more of a financial transaction.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. To incentivize people.
It's even worse than I thought.
Incentivize other companies to get more environmental so that they can, overcome the abuse that the other companies are paying.
Are they doing anything with the forest that they bought? Are they like planting more trees?
No. Them in particular, no. There are many, many, many afforestation efforts underway. In fact, there was an afforestation effort.
I'm sorry, I don't know what that means.
Instead of deforesting, so actually planting net new trees.
Oh, I didn't know you forests. Had a. I didn't know they had a word for it.
Yeah, that in Guatemala, I believe it was, where they went and planted non-indigenous trees to the area, and so it actually wound up. Taking the ecosystem out of
haven't
balance.
Haven't they seen Fern Gully?
I haven't seen Fern Gully.
You should. It's a great one.
It's a cartoon?
Yeah. They're trying to like chop down the forest and their little tree fairies. I haven't seen it in a long time, but.
Tad makes reference to Gaia and Captain Planet in this, which I thought was funny because that was Ryan Stanko's contribution in a newsletter for Earth Day.
That is
for Earth Day.
Yeah. The update on Earth Day.
Oh, this is good.
My roommate told me that Saturday was Earth Day.
Now, wait, just do, now be specific. On 4/20, 99 decided to share.
Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day, man.
She told me it was Earth Day. Wait, here's
so on International Get High as Fuck Day, 99 decides to share half your thing.
I wasn't high yet when I posted it. I was high later. Okay. But I was like, fuck, today's not Earth Day.
And I got
said anything to me.
I got your Slack like hours later, like after I guess you had already posted it.
No, I texted you. Yeah. Because I didn't know for like 6 hours.
I'm like, okay, it's not Earth Day. And I wasn't putting two and two together.
Yeah. Because I saw that you looked at the story. That's why I texted
you. But
it didn't
register with me. So mm-hmm. I wasn't even putting two and two together.
Well, you figured it out eventually.
I did.
Oh, you didn't. Oh, when you texted me back.
Yeah, when I saw the story, like it was all a confused.
I do
weed day haze.
I also apparently do that where I invite you into the middle of a conversation where I'm like, don't you know what I'm talking about? So I just assumed you would be on the same page as me.
I don't want to gender this conversation, but that's, you know, that is a female trait.
Since when?
Always.
I've never heard of that.
No?
No.
You've never seen those memes?
No.
About the conversation the wife is that your wife is having in her head, and she brings you into the last 20% of it, and you're just struggling to catch up, because that is my life.
No, I've
There's
never.
My wife has a 24/7 dialogue running.
Well, yeah,
every once in a while, a little bit of it escapes, and I just have to like put the pieces together to catch up.
Oh my God, yes. And then Mrs. Faces will get mad at me for not like knowing what we're talking about, and then I have to be like, baby, you just told me the end of the wild.
I thought it was more of a, like an anxiety thing of like, oh, my brain, I'm just going and I'm talking and I'm thinking and I go like, yeah, the sky is brown. And then it's like, what?
I was like, okay. Yeah, no doubt. So that's Tesla. That's Summer Lee. The FTC did a thing.
The FTC,
which is pretty cool.
Oh no, FCC.
The FCC. Yep,
that's funny. They should make a new one.
The FTC.
Yeah,
got rid of non-competes. Hey, Manny,
that was pretty good.
That. He'd be like, "I'm not," and I'm already stopping this recording.
I thought it was good.
I've interjected enough.
The FCC got rid of banned. Basically,
FTC,
the FTC basically banned non-competes. Here's the thing: it's not law. It will be law, but it is also easily overcome. In a Trump victory, expect this to be overturned immediately. In a Biden victory, it will remain on the books and then become law because it will become part of the uniform code. But it will always be susceptible to... It's interesting in that this doesn't need to be legislated. It's part of the uniform code, so it can be regulated and technically become law. So if you go into court and you try to enforce a non-compete as the law currently stands, they would look at this as settled law as it stands as a regulation that is in as part of the uniform code. But it will always be subject to the vagaries of the executive branch and the appointments to the FTC, because important to note that it only passed by a 3-2 margin. It is a big deal. It is a big deal. I mean, I've been up against non-competes before on both sides of it, in where you're trying to retain employees, but you're also trying to hire people. Companies, organizations weaponize them, and they run so far afoul from natural. It's fascinating that conservatives struggle with this, because they're all about individual liberties and the liberties of the person. And, you know, we should be able to do whatever the fuck we want, unless a corporation tells you that you can't, in which case that's okay. So it's fascinating to watch them kind of struggle with this thing and try to line up that narrative that, like, no, it's a good thing for corporations because it creates more competition in the marketplace and it helps boost wages. And they're like, none of that is fucking true. This is just it's one of the worst corporate practices that exists. And also, infamously, famously hard to enforce if it ever gets to court, because judges do not like non-competes because they do not line up with our civil liberties. Having said that, the reason that they wind up working is because they are a financial weapon. The threat of litigation, there's very few people in America that can withstand corporate litigation as an individual. And there are a few corporations that are willing to fight so hard for a rank and file employee as to go to court with the somebody who's trying to enforce it on the other side. And so it leaves you without so many rights. And there's right now, there's a very, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with it. But in the alt-right media landscape right now, you've got somebody like Steven Crowder, who's like the living example of this right now. And if you watch Majority Report, they've talked a lot about this because they've been able to show that this is the core of the non-compete issue with the FTC. Crowder made everybody sign non-disclosure and non-competes if you were joining the latter with Crowder, little media or not so little media organization. I mean, it was a massively influential and financially.
There's a lot happening right now.
Yeah, no, Crowder's. The amount of money that they make at Daily Wire and the Crowders of the world is enormous compared to the left ecosystem. At any rate, he had enforced this non-compete and the non-disclosure agreement on somebody who he nicknamed Not Gay Jared, who is very much in the conservative ecosystem. And when he left, he was unable to talk about it or work anywhere else in that same area because of the threat of litigation with a non-compete that no judge would have stood up in court, but he could not afford to battle it. And it was interesting to watch that play out on the right, because there were people that were trying to defend the indefensible with Crowder in forcing the non-compete, standing up for a guy in this Not Gay Jared who is...
Is there a gay Jared?
I don't even know how that nickname came about. That's just how he's known in the conservative ecosystem.
It's like a
right?
Howard Stern nickname.
Totally, yeah, like Stuttering John or whatever the other.
Don't
yeah.
see any other ones.
I don't. Why? What other ones?
The M word, the R word.
Oh yeah. So it presented them with a real challenge, and you saw them really struggling with this narrative because they know that Crowder's a shitbag, but they also have to stand up for this thing, and then you have people on the left that have to defend the ability and the right for somebody who to them is completely reprehensible to find work in the conservative media landscape.
Sounds like an ACLU case.
Totally.
Surprised they didn't take it.
I'm surprised too, actually. Yeah. So anyway, really interesting stuff there. That's the backdrop to the FTC thing. And one quick thing before we get into a lot of the feedback, because we're going to start with general feedback and then we're going to get into RFK specific feedback, because we sort of hit a well of probably Russian bots. But
you seem like real people to me.
Some are real people. Others are just part of a farm. They don't watch the commentary, but they comment. They don't watch the video, but they comment. There's a recent RFK poll that I've seen blasted all over liberal media. So everything from Brian Tyler Cohn to Secular Talk to MSNBC, everybody talking about this. A new poll that came out that shows that RFK is actually taking more from Trump than he is for Biden, and he supports this. It's a poll done by NBC of 1,000 voters in the country, right? There's way more evidence out there that in the polling universe that he takes more from Biden than he does for Trump. But this latest one shows that he takes from Trump. It's a single poll. Polls are flawed. Methodologies are flawed. When you see it done by a media organization by that, realize that it's done in a very, very archaic way. The whole point of the video that I put up that we released on the audio version on the podcast is that the universe that RFK is tapping into is notoriously difficult to track and to gauge. It's that same universe that we did not see for Bernie and we didn't see for Trump. These are the non-core, often younger, and many times a different ethnicity than the older white population that tends to respond to these archaic polls. Of those people surveyed, I can see people going back and forth. Maybe it's Biden today, it's Trump tomorrow. Trump's on trial right now. He looks really stupid and orange and disgusting, and it reminded me how terrible he is and all that kind. I can see it of the moment flipping one way or the other. On balance, I am talking about the Rogan sphere, the tech bros, the supplement taking, juicing, all the way on the spectrum from
not,
the incel.
Not juicing in the other way.
Like, yeah.
Fresh pressed juice.
Right. All the way from the classic computer incel who just doesn't go out and lives in this misogynist universe online, right through to the RFK archetype of the I'm pumping iron, walking around without my shirt on, defending civil liberties and civil rights and all those things, and then saying a bunch of really wild things about don't tread on me that line up with the libertarian stance. Those people aren't answering polls. Likewise, polls are notoriously difficult to conduct in and among ethnic populations, especially now add the extra layer of young ethnic populations. They're not getting reached in the same way that you're reaching somebody on a fucking landline in the middle of the country with a home.
Most people don't have landlines.
That's what I'm talking about. And these, you can't provide enough context on a text poll or, respond to the survey, or I'll give you a buck for this or for that. You don't get the depth and the breadth of getting a pollster who's on the phone with you, walking you through questions, walking you through scenarios, and really vetting conditional responses beyond just the absolutes, right? So I actually don't buy into much of it. I think we can use it as a broad gauge for how where the sentiment lands at this moment in the country. But to actually say, okay, 6 months from now, here's the scenario. It's this person versus this person. Who do you like? Okay, now add this third person into the mix. Who do you like at that? Project where you are. Forget where are gas prices at the time. Do I still have a job? What did Trump get arrested? Go to jail, not go to jail? Did the economy turn around a little bit, or did inflation tick back up? Like all of the conditional elements that go into voting, just lining up, it's a personality litmus test of how you feel at this particular moment. And it's probably based on who's getting more or less exposure for better, for worse. But the universe of people that I'm talking about that would be willing to maybe go RFK, low information voters who are in very specific subsets of the population that are typically untrackable. He is appealing on so many levels. And his campaign is smart enough to put him in the places that speak to those select audiences. So you will see him on, let's say, The Breakfast Club. Not the best example, but you will see him there and he'll have an hour. You'll see him on Joe Rogan and he'll have 2 hours. And you'll see him on the PBD podcast and he'll have 2.5 hours. He'll get into all these little spaces, which ties into the people that commented to us on the RFK stuff that we did in a really dynamic way. RFK all the way, RFK 2024, this is bullshit, you suck. People not even watching the video because I'm looking at the analytics and I see they're not getting more than 2 minutes into the video as an average, which means most people, they're looking at the headline, they're commenting. It's the UNFTR faithful that are probably watching and pushing, the minutes up, right? So they're just going to respond to whatever the narrative is in their head. It's headline reading and that's fine.
And they all told you were parroting mainstream media, which was funny.
Right. Which, if you know anything about UNFTR, is not what we do, but we will talk about in generalities what we think the electorate will do. So in that instance, sure. But in the way that we're analyzing it, no. So anyway,
maybe we should get
don't look at the polls
into that. Just since we're already on RFK, maybe we should jump to that feedback.
Not a bad idea. All right. So we'll start with the inspiration for all of this then. And it's from 504 B-Shot, who said, I have a lot of kids and a lot of jobs and roles and not a lot of time. A friend of mine was talking up RFK and I didn't really have a response, so I checked on his platform, and other than the vaccine bullshit, it seemed pretty good. I know you all have covered him before, and I'm pretty sure the UNFTR movement is not a fan. I'm probably not remembering, but could I get a refresher? What's wrong with this guy other than, and in addition to the vaccine bullshit, is he leaving a dangerous libertarian stance out of his platform? The short answer is yes. So if you didn't listen to it or you didn't check it out on YouTube, the upshot of my take on the RFK candidacy is that he is a classic libertarian in disguise who is riding a populist wave in certain subsets of the population that will appeal to people who are more apt to vote for somebody like Donald Trump because they're disaffected in the same type of way as the traditional Trump voter. So that's sort of like the thesis that I put out there. What I went for was his platform specifically. So in the piece, we went through line by line what his general stance is on the issues that pertain to the campaign that they put out. Not saying his opinion on all things that might have been that he might have been interviewed on over the past 50 years. I'm talking about specifically the platform, the policy statements that he put out into the world. We went through them one by one and said what they are and lined them up against what the narrative is versus, you know, what that what actually means, right? And the most glaring piece of it is something that he is the most consistent about because he probably never gets challenged on it. And it is the fact that he has said quite often, you will not find anyone more supportive of the free markets than me. That is his mantra. If that is his fail-safe, also his fallback position for anything that you question him on in terms of economic policy. So he is a free market libertarian cut from the cloth of the Chicago school, pure and simple. It is his most consistent talking point. Why? Because nobody challenges him on it. Bottom line, because every other talking point people were able to surface, you know, he said this over here, but he said this over here. He's very adept at shape-shifting for the audience that he's talking in front of. I do not criticize him for that, mind you, because he's a politician in training. That's what politicians do. The only one who doesn't is Bernie. Bernie is what Bernie is. And even if you're pressing him on something he doesn't want to talk about, he'll bring it back to his narrative and say, I don't want to talk about that. I will talk to you about millionaires and billionaires. He is so on message and so on point all the time. So I'm not even chastising RFK for being the shape-shifting typical politician that we see, because the best example we've ever had of that is Trump. Trump will be whoever the fuck he needs to be in that moment in time and doesn't have an ideological boner in his body. The vaccine stuff I purposely stayed away from because I wanted to invite people in from RFK's camp that would have started with that as their beginning point and then fallen in love with the other things. You don't have to address his vaccine, either anti-vax stance, which his audience doesn't think he is, his vaccine hesitant stance, which they tend to couch it with. You don't have to talk about any of that. You can just talk about the policy statements that he listed out as a candidate for president of the United States. And I can take issue with every single part of his platform.
And there's even, I mean, there are people like me who are going to be turned off from get-go about, you know, being even remotely anti-vax. That's going to close the door to him for me.
And he knows that.
Right.
Which is why he's not gunning to win. So what is he gunning for? Right?
Fauci's job.
Maybe. And that's the other. So, you know what? That's the other part of this thing. Not a great example, but Andrew Cuomo, right? He was the head of HUD. He wanted to be president of the United States at one point, but he was the head of.
I think he still does.
He probably still thinks he can be.
Sometimes I do slip and say Chawella.
There are people with very big, very high-minded aspirations of themselves that will actually do the work to learn the system and be in charge of the thing that they're most capable of being in charge of. I'm not saying Andrew Cuomo is that person, but he's that type of megalomania type personality and bro personality. Like, you know, the big dude who lifts and, you know, likes to be pictured with his shirt off and is going to be like that libertarian minded guy who wants to appeal to the ladies. Like, that's the Andrew Cuomo, Chris Cuomo, RFK. They're all the same person. But at least Andrew Cuomo was in the system and understood how governments work. Somebody like RFK, I have the same criticism of him as I did of Donald Trump, as I do of Cornel West, as I do of anybody that has never been in public service. People treat this as if it is something that can be learned on the job when you don't know how the government works. And all you wind up doing, if you're successful, is wasting whatever the length of your tenure and term is, fucking around, not knowing how things work. That's it.
The people in the comments, though, they think because he's from a political family, that means somehow it's bred into them.
I know. And I've driven a car, you know, since I was 17 years old now. I've been driving a car for a very long time. And Dan M will be very upset with that. And I do not know how to build one. I mean, it's always the dumbest talking point. It's like the people that are like, I've been flying my whole life. Give me the fucking wheel. Like, no, that's just not how the world works. Politics, government, public policy is complicated. It's complex. I would again direct you to listen this weekend to Tad DeLay talk about the intersectionality of every piece of our life, from all the different ice ages that we've had right through agriculture and how that created systems and hierarchies within civilization that led to the proletariat being subjugated, being in a position to be impacted by climate change, and being the only people that could actually take it over from this point forward to make a meaningful impact on it. Everything is a domino in this world. Somebody like RFK just doesn't get to cut the line because he's from that family. People will disagree with that, and I totally understand. But then, you know, it by that logic, literally any Kennedy is capable of being president, right? By that logic. Why are you laughing? What am I missing?
Nothing. I'll tell you later.
Okay.
I mean, look, can I see something controversial?
Yeah.
If we put him in office, he's going to get assassinated.
Oh.
He's following the family legacy. He's going to drive his plane or boat into a ditch or whatever the fuck they've done.
Nothing bad ever happens to the Kennedys.
Who was that comedian that said that? We talked about it early on.
I don't remember.
Who was like, oh, quick question. Does Sirhan have a child?
I think, and I was like, what does that mean? We'd have to relitigate.
Right.
I forgot already what you're talking about.
That's the guy that killed Bobby Kennedy.
Okay, yes.
Like, oh, does he have a kid? So, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, well, I think the type of person who says that or who believes that is the type of person who's like, I could fight pain. Like, that's the type of person. Mm-hmm. There is a mindset of, it is a superiority complex.
Is there a Kennedy on board?
But, you know, even like, it's the person who goes to the Museum of Modern Art and goes, I could paint that. Like,
right.
That's the type of personality that believes that they can do anything they set their mind to, which is something we teach. You know, we tell our kids, but no one should believe it in that way. maybe limit yourself. Stop believing in yourself and, you know, knock yourself down a few pegs. You probably couldn't paint it. Probably not. Probably can't fly a plane, you know?
Yeah.
John Travolta and what's his face?
Tom Cruise.
Yeah, what's the other one?
Only Scientologist.
Harrison Ford, always crashing his plane. Take from them.
Yeah.
The actual comments we got.
Yeah.
So, you know, I pulled out some ones because, like we were saying, the comments are vast. A lot of just like Kennedy Shannon, that's her name, right? Is it Shannon?
Shanahan.
Shanahan. I just didn't read it.
Nicole Shanahan. Properly.
I'm going to call her Shannon.
Okay.
No, it's okay. I'm not going to be disrespectful to people just because, but there's a lot of just 2024, I'm going to vote for him. But there were people who were like genuinely a little bit engaging with you,
yep,
trying to tell you their beliefs. So this is, their username is like, auto-generated. So a bunch of letters. So first, I've watched RFK Jr. videos, just about all of them. RFK Jr. said he is for women's choice. He said that it's not the government's choice. He's for all of our rights given to us in the Constitution. Trump has said he wants to shred the Constitution.
Shred.
Sorry. Shred was spelled wrong, and then I just had a
shred.
So Trump has said he wants to shred the Constitution. Second of all, I'm pretty sure Kennedy knows more about government and history than Trump does.
Indisputable.
And then later, I'm going to take my chances with RFK. From what I've seen, he's a lot more intelligent than the other two, Trump, Biden. Like, that was a lot of the argument was like, they think that because you're anti-RFK, you're endorsing Trump. And it's like, no, we don't want that either.
Right.
We're not comparing him to Trump because Trump's a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
I'm sure RFK is smarter than Trump.
Oh, without a doubt.
Like,
I'd be willing to bet that he's more intelligent than Biden.
I don't want to make that claim necessarily.
It's fine.
Maybe at this present moment, maybe not. I wouldn't say in his heyday he was more intelligent.
I don't know. I don't know.
You can't.
I would be willing to concede that if that was the core of your argument, I'd be like, okay, that's also not the point.
Yeah, but what do you mean? Wouldn't you want the smartest person running our country?
Nope, not necessarily.
Why? What do you mean? You want an idiot running our country? You want to vote for Trump?
Experience. Experience matters.
He's with Kennedy.
Yeah, no, I get it. And, you know, I don't think that William Kennedy, the one who went to jail for raping the girls on the lawn in Cape Cod, should be the president.
Yeah, but that's just an outlier.
Not really. There's a lot of outliers. I mean, listen, I'm not criticizing Kennedy for, you know, his past. I credit him for overcoming his heroin addiction, as an example. Or, you know, the multiple affairs that he had during his second marriage.
That's his private business.
Absolutely. I'm not condemning him for that even. I'm just merely talking about his experience. So I'm not talking about the fact that he's on his third marriage into a celebrity and that's all he could, you know, that's how he manages his personal life, or that he overcame his heroin addiction, or that he failed the bar. You know, I'm willing to overcome all, you know, to look past all of that stuff. He just simply doesn't have the government experience.
I don't know about that.
Bro, I don't know about that.
Do you want to read the next one?
Well, Dorian Martin said, if you watch any of his interviews with podcasters, you'll find he's not a mystery. He's quite transparent. I believe so. I really believe he will bring the country together, unlike Biden or Trump. I think he is transparently transparent in that he is who he needs to be in front of the person that he's in front of. And I think that's, again, it's pretty obvious because he's one of those people where you could go through, except on the one single libertarian free market issue, and find him sidestepping issues or talking about them perhaps in a different way, speaking out of both sides of his mouth. I mean, he does it in almost every interview, frankly, but it is what it is. Then we got Gail Muir.
Yeah. So Gail said, then this is the type of thing that, you know, these are the worrisome ones.
That's right.
I used to think of myself as a progressive Democrat until I realized both parties are corrupt and have become a uni party of sock puppets for the corporate elites. Every progressive podcaster I used to listen to sounds totally ignorant when it comes to what RFK Jr. is about. Then a little later, Gail
this
says,
is the core.
The worst atrocity which broke the Nuremberg Code was the taking of our bodily autonomy and our right to informed consent to medical procedures and experimental medical treatments. I belong to a growing community of doctors and scientists, as well as anyone else who advocates for medical freedoms and bodily integrity and autonomy.
So I think that this will be debated till kingdom come, and that is any decision to mandate vaccines. And that's really at the core of what Gail's talking about. So her advocacy begins with that central question of somebody told me she's a doctor, which means she was probably forced to take a vaccine.
We don't know that they're a doctor.
I belong to a growing community of doctors and scientists. Again, willing to concede that you're in that community and you were likely in a situation where your employer said either take the vaccine or you lose your job. That's something we can have that very specific conversation about what is experimental or not. Does this actually impact your bodily autonomy? And does the overriding argument of greater good, which is the umbrella that vaccines have always been talked about under, supersede your individual right? It's a completely different discussion from, is this the right person to run the country? But this is, for a lot of the most fervent supporters of RFK, their gateway. This is the doorway that they've walked through to come here. And it's the ones that, once they got inside, love what they see across the board. And what I'm taking issue with is, forget your entrance, because my entrance to Cornel West, for example, is in his lifelong advocacy. And if there was a choice between him and an experienced person on the ballot, and it was like gun to the head time, I don't want Cornel West running the country. I want, as a New Yorker, to give him as much support as possible in what is definitely a fait accompli for the Democratic Party, in order to send a message to them that that you do not have our whole support. You're going to win this, but there are things that you need to incorporate. It's a momentary protest vote that does not impact the outcome of the election. But this is going to happen in Michigan, in Ohio, in Wisconsin, in Florida, in Arizona, in Georgia, and all of the places that where this election lays in the balance. And just like the last couple of elections, we're probably talking about a universe of anywhere between 20 and 40 counties in the country. Are there enough Gales who found themselves walking through this first open door and then loved what they saw once they got inside the house? My goal is to show you that inside the house is not everything that it seems. As a matter of fact, you have a highly incompetent person who does not have a mastery of the issues and talks out of both sides of his mouth and is motivated purely by name recognition and a grasp at power. And a long one at that. It's not even possible. Now, Kalbach and I had a good exchange. Initially, Kalbach criticized me for misrepresenting just about every policy that he's making, beginning with the bruh, to which I responded, bruh, reading line by line from his policy statements, so he should coordinate with his team. My motivation is to speak honestly about people, power, and politics, to which Kalbach, not a bot, came back and said, I apologize for my reactive comment. If that's your motivation, I respect it. Here's what I've seen. He's made it abundantly clear that he's for securing the border. We can talk about it. He's also made it clear he's pro-choice, non-ambiguously. Your assessment of his VP pick also appears to be knee-jerk, assuming the surface-level explanation rather than trying to look into who she is and what the underlying reasoning may be. She's exceptionally intelligent, and if you look into it, what she has to say, it may change your mind. And then ends with, I think he cares more about everyday American people than any candidate we've seen in a long time, other than maybe Bernie Sanders. I included the Bernie Sanders bit because that just shows that he speaks to this type of populist person that can demonstrate empathy for the public. So perhaps this is Kalbach's gateway into the House. And when he gets into the House, she gets into the House, they're seeing something that they like. So when we go for it line by line, I am not misrepresenting his policy statements. What I did was I listed his policy statements and then told you why I didn't like them. Regarding his VP pick, you have somebody in the top spot who has never held public office ever before, who picked somebody who has never held public office before. And it is indisputable that she paid for his Super Bowl commercial, that she has inherited wealth from marrying a tech billionaire. Not saying she's not successful. I'm not saying she's not intelligent. And I'm not saying she didn't carve out, you know, a great place for herself in Silicon Valley. I don't want to see more Silicon Valley people running this country, nor do I think that inheriting your wealth through marriage from a billionaire puts you in a position to have any sort of special idea about how to run the country. And this is somebody who has never held public office. Or how to run. Well, I mean, she's run a business, to be fair.
Okay, fine.
But she hasn't run a multi-billion dollar business. But whatever. I mean, I'm not saying she's not intelligent. I'm not saying that she's not successful. And I'm not saying, as he says, that she's not the example of the American dream. Came from absolutely nothing in a very impoverished community. And now she's a vice president on a major, you know,
that's ticket. My American wow. dream.
Right? And she's fabulously wealthy.
Come from nothing, marry a billionaire.
Yeah, brilliant, you know? So, yeah, it's the experience thing that I don't like. As far as the border, he has said that he wants to shut down the border. Again, Biden has said the same thing as well. He's indistinguishable from Biden. The one thing that is absent from what Biden has done, or said at least, is the root causes strategy of funding the areas and trying to recapture some of the Democratic participation in the areas within the Northern Triangle and other parts of Latin America. He's failing on that. I'm not saying it's working. Kamala Harris is in charge of that initiative. They're not putting enough money there. They're not paying enough attention to it. And there's not enough coordination between agencies that can restore democracy. It's a failure. Having said that, RFK doesn't even talk about it. All he talks about is that we have to clamp down on the border, use more technology. That's a Biden statement. We need to shore up the areas that people are coming in the most. We need to add more judges to vet the people coming across the border. We need to turn people away that are coming here for economic opportunity, but offer asylum. And for people who are genuinely coming here, escaping something that is life or death, and that we need to overwhelm the courts with the capacity to adjudicate these cases quickly. It's identical to Biden. Period, end of story. Now, on to Pastor Tim, who begins with a little criticism of us fucking around a little bit, which is fine. And it's fine.
Well, this is what I'll say, Pastor Tim. We were fucking around because we didn't have any emails. No one fucking emailed us. So what are we going to do? Write in more. That's to all on fuckers. If we're shooting the shit too much, I mean, maybe we're just having a good day and we're enjoying each other's company. That's part of it. But we can only talk about what you...
It was a particularly light week that week.
Yeah, because otherwise then we're just rehashing the episode and that's not interesting.
Yeah.
Because for the most part, there's no new points coming out.
Now this week, we're actually going to run out of time.
Yes, so. Like actually.
Yeah.
But Pastor Tim made fun of Max for saying that Pennsylvania was big, saying you never need to bother to mention that you're from New York. The fact that you thought Pennsylvania goes on forever just serves to solidify the notion the rest of us have about you. The myopia that doesn't allow you to see past Philadelphia is a persistent condition.
He said, anyway, loved the episode referred to in the title, which was the 45 spectacular bullshit, and would have preferred hearing a little more about it. I would like to actually maybe do a brief one talking about the performance of Trump's SPAC now that it's officially out there and losing money in the marketplace. But anyway, thank you, Pastor Tim. We appreciate you. We love you. Aaron H. said,
Yeah, I think this one's too long.
I'm going to, we're kind of running out of time here. And I want to, it's so good. Can we save it for the next one?
Yeah.
We have a lot of good stuff to get to that maybe we'll do in show notes next week. So we've got more feedback on the border episode from Elena and Noah J that I want to get to, especially Elena's, because she's talking about L'Obrador. We need to get more into Mexican politics. We're going to cover that in part three. It's coming out not this week because we got the phone a friend, but the week after that, which is the
tad delay on the over the border part.
So the one that the third installment, final installment of the series
probably
is the economics.
That. Sorry, Tad.
I'm sure he doesn't. Just say my name, right? It's fine. So the third installment comes out the following week, and it is the economics of migration. That'll be to put an end cap on that discussion. So we'll put some of this feedback, incorporate that into those. And why don't we just close it out with the new memberships? We've got some good ones here.
Yeah, let me run through them. We got Brian V from AZ, Wonder Woman, Drew J, Goat in memory of Per Harald Ottesen, Stevie D, Dan G, The Socialist Woodworker, Lost in Idaho, Mary Jo M, Stephen T, Vancouverizer, Taja, Illinois Landscaper, and Bill.
Thank you all so much for supporting the show. Can't do it without you. We've got a lot of stuff coming up. So as a reminder, got Phone a Friend this weekend. Then you've got the closeout of the show. Probably going to drop maybe one or two more mini things in between. Let me know if you're okay with the short stuff that we just pull from the YouTube feed. Sometimes I get inspired when we're here late night and I'll just drop something on YouTube. So I'm thinking about putting out the audio of those things. So if you dig it, let us know. As always, email us with your feedback. Subscribe to the newsletter. Support the show. Thank you to Manny Faces 99. Thank you. And to the unfuckers of the world that keep on unfucking, we appreciate you.
See ya soon.